You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Are there any questions or anything to share?
I was quite confused yesterday evening at the end of the Dharma talk. And because there are a number of, I don't know what to call them, items which I don't understand how to put together. Like there's this the possibility to bring forth a turning point. And from what you said, I understood that that is something that can evolve or happen after work with momentum. Okay? On the other hand, there was the leap, which is something sudden. You can't leap.
The same thing.
The same thing? Just two sides of it?
Just different names for the same thing. Yeah. Could you hear what she was asking? I'll review that part and then you can continue, okay? Okay. So in the Dharma talk yesterday, I talked about Dogen's line of bringing forth the turning point. And what was the other one? The leap. Let's see. And the leap, which is also a Dogen word. And both of them mean the same thing. So there's doing what we can, attending to our craft, which is that actual practice that fits you, that's the actual way to the Robert Fripp line about making, reaching the intangible through the tangible, making the intangible tangible. And that is a momentum, and at some point there is a turning point and a leap that comes forth. And forth is not force, someone was asking about. I know you didn't have that question, but someone else, so I wanted to make sure that you understand. I wasn't saying that there's a bringing force, a turning point. There is, there are forces involved, and there's a finding an aligning of the forces so that the forces don't work against each other, but are a momentum that at some point crosses over. And at that point, we may notice, not notice. I mentioned yesterday around that. It could be 10 years later that I realize it's been 10 years since I was so down on myself, for example. Okay, please go ahead.
Then there's a very difficult sentence. How is it not the path proceeding from sin? I know English, but I don't understand it.
Yeah. So, like I was saying yesterday, to appreciate the scene of the Zen master with his students, and especially speaking of a path that precedes idea, to ask a question in a way that leaves you like, what? Is appropriate, can be appropriate. So we can work through the sentence again. How can it not be the path preceding concept? We can just take off the first part, how can it not be? And then we can, okay, path preceding concept. concept is similar to the idea. Idea, ideology, it's something that we've made. It's okay?
And it's preceding.
Yeah, and then preceding is comes before. So something that comes before thought, comes before idea, comes before ideology, comes before something made, and then path.
And this state, is it referring to
meditation? Maybe we go one by one?
Yes, but discriminating mind, I think, is before.
Okay, so go ahead.
As a discriminating mind, if I enter into this image of bringing forth, I have to send my arms or I have to send my forces in order to bring forth something. It is in certain direction, a certain direction that I aim to, and by aiming, I am discriminating. I have discriminating mind. So, yes.
If it would be that kind of direction, if it's a direction that I'm aiming for, that's discriminating mind.
Yes.
If it's a turning point that is not given.
Where should I send my forces? Where should I align my forces?
Okay. So at first, I try to summarize the question.
All
right. The other side of the room. And I hope I remember to mention the arm movements, because you were saying bringing forth, which I found interesting, bringing forth instead of bringing forth. So the same phrase, bringing forth a turning point, he's interested in the word turning. And for him, that implies a direction. Turning would mean turning this way or that way. That's the assumption, I think. And then how does that fit with the fact that this path of meditation is blocked or covered by discriminating thinking? So discriminating thinking means we set up right and wrong. This is not that, that is not this. I like this, I don't like that. This is good, this is bad. I want to go in this direction, I don't want to go in that direction. And so he's asking about what sounds like the conflict between having an aim, and he was going like this, and bringing forth. And he was going like this, which is interesting, because usually bringing forth for me would be like something comes forward. I think I missed something, did I? Have your questions?
The word bringing, okay.
Not necessarily. I can bring this bowl to the kitchen and leave it there. So, and then he's asking, and I think that's maybe the main question, is how do we align these forces so that there's some momentum, so that something happens? Is that correct? Yeah.
Although without discriminating.
Yes, exactly. So the question is exactly the kind of core nut question of spiritual path. So thank you. How do we behave fruitfully? How do we in the words of Rumi, it would be how to find the direction that's not a direction. So it's mostly about experience, and that requires trust, and we don't have trust. So the first most important quality that we can't just magically make appear is trust. When we don't have trust, then maybe from courage, we can be that interested in, is there a direction that's not a direction? Is there a happening that's not pre-planned, but that is fruitful, that is a harmonious coming together of the forces that are at play towards freedom? Is there a direction that is freedom? Is there a way to put things in place in a certain way so that that direction of freedom? So if we could actually go back to the phrase turning, bringing forth a turning point. And I think that the translation is really nice because it does give a sense of some directions are happening, but it doesn't nail it down. It doesn't say go right and then left and then stop. So bringing, he was also saying bringing implies some kind of movement. Bringing forth also implies some movement. Turning implies movement. Point doesn't. If we look at life a bit bare, we can notice that even though it's a dangerous world and things die, things also keep coming up, don't they? And it's as if out of nothing, out of nowhere. Just recycling all the same stardust that also seems to have come out of nowhere. So if we take the human perspective, human-centric perspective to the side, and be with life a bit more bare, then we have to notice that life brings forth. So even if you don't go outside the hall, you can be bare with life. And in your own experience, thought probably has been coming up out of nowhere quite a lot. And then mood and emotion coming as if out of nowhere. We're so used to it, we don't think about it, but think about it. Where does it come from? And then also the body. Where does that come from? The cells turning into a heart and lungs, diaphragm, intestines. It's really hard for us, but it's also really obvious that there is a kind of coming forth, at least. I don't know about bringing yet. I haven't got to bringing, but coming forth happens. Or not. Is it?
I'm not sure I get the term coming forth.
Coming forth?
Like appearing out of nowhere?
Yeah, more or less. coming up, let's say there is dirt and then there's a plant. It's coming forth. There's a woman, there's a baby, it's coming forth. There's a sky, there's a cloud, there's rain, there's a river. It's usually easier for us to get inspired to look for what's beyond our limited sense of self when we're in touch with suffering. It's usually more motivating for us when we're in touch with getting old, getting sick, dying, losing someone or losing something. When you lose someone, when you lose something, it's like, what is this life? I need to know. And that's really good that at least at that point we're interested. But often we're interested only until we feel a bit better. And then we do feel a bit better because we start connecting. And we start letting our interest and our inquiry and our intelligence move, and it's fulfilling, and we feel a bit better, and we forget that we were interested in what is this life. Because it's not only like out of the ground comes a plant, out of the plant comes a flower, out of the flower comes a fruit. It keeps on happening, doesn't it? As over the next few days you might start to get more rested, we're more available to be motivated to leave room for our own intelligence, to leave room for more connection, not because we're upset. So upset is one kind of turning, upset. And it's good, thank goodness, at least. When something upsetting happens, we're like, what? And we're willing to question sometimes everything. But like, let's say drinking water, for example. I hope something you do a lot on a hot day like today, by the way. There's enough just in drinking water to upset everything. So a kind of turning away from our pre-planned directions, we could say, is a turning point or a leap. But also, it's this lovely question leads to what I had thought of speaking about today. One of the things is starting to notice a difference in quality of thought. So sometimes we can feel the same repetitive thinking, and it's either accelerating or kind of spraying out. The same words from that thought could come in a completely different quality and be so helpful. So instead of repetition, realization. And I don't mean right now big realization, although even a small realization is big. But yesterday the realization that Robert Fripp had on the couch of, oh, it's not about me, it's about life. Music, he said, music is always here, present, available, and not pushy. So music, I think, is a combination. The word could be taken to mean aliveness and maybe our when we get into that harmony of forces in contact with aliveness, and then in any situation, transformation happens. We don't require a nice situation to feel enough at ease to let the wisdom be brought forth. Does that make sense? So just feeling in your own experience when thinking is repetitive and hurts, even if it's a nice kind of thinking. Feeling the speed in it, the overactiveness of it, and what is it covering up? Why is it so busy? Why? This is another wow. We're so ashamed that our minds are thinking the same thing over and over again, that we don't stop to think, wow, my mind is thinking the same thing over and over again. So this could be actually an example. The same words, wow, my mind is thinking the same thing over and over again. Oh my God, what's wrong with me? I've got to get rid of this before anybody realizes what's happening, how broken I am, or before I can be myself. The same words, wow, my mind keeps thinking the same thing over and over again. Interesting. And starting to be more open to hear from yourself what kind of conditions bring the repetitive thinking, what kind of conditions bring the realization, which is not always in thought, but. Anything to ask or say so far? And we'll come back to you in a moment. Yes.
What is the realization?
Realization, so just like, wow, my mind is thinking the same thing over and over again. It's real. There's a kind of, instead of the forces going against each other, so I'm so ashamed that my mind keeps thinking the same thing over and over again. So the emotional force is trying to cover up the fact, the direct experience. And so there's not momentum. There's burning off energy. The realization is just like, oh, honesty. Honesty happens. We could try to be honest and it's not interesting. Like I'm telling you, wow, I think it's really cool that the mind is interesting, at least, that the mind is thinking the same thing again and again. But if for you it's not interesting, then there's not that momentum. There's not that depth of contact and honesty. So it's important to start to get the feeling of when there's that contact with honesty. And wow, that's real. And the feeling of it is sometimes a bit like a dawning. Like in the morning, the sun's coming up. It starts to get light. And sometimes it's like, oh, it's daytime. And sometimes there isn't. Because it's really important for each of us to leave room for our own realization. Let's say you're walking to the hall because it's time for meditation on the schedule, and something dawns, and you kind of feel like just letting that have its importance. Sometimes it's a little bit like an egg cracking. Maybe it's more like a butterfly coming out of the cocoon. It needs its time. If it doesn't get its time, all is lost to kind of spread out. And it can be really helpful not to think much, but just to let that. Oh, I've been been telling my wife so many years that she should stop, na 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 na, and I've been doing that.
Oh.
Like, not like, ah, I'm such a, or just, that's a bringing forth. So just as it's important in the moment that we're like, oh, wow, a leaf, or a foot, or, oh, I've been doing that a long time and blaming somebody else for it. Or even just, oh, this is hard. Or, wow, oh, this is good, even though it's hard. Or just a shift that we're in our body for the first time. Whoa. And shame wants to come in. I've never been in my body and I'm 50 years old. But like, just, wow. So giving that room can be important. And then starting to kind of get to know all that came before. So often, not long before that dawning, which often the honesty itself, the being in contact itself, feels good, even if the realization is like, kind of horror. I've been doing that a long time and hope not to do it ever again. The realization is usually a kind of enlargement and relief. What often comes before, maybe always, is some kind of bump. Some kind of, like in the airplane, turbulence. And it has really specific flavors, and it's really hard to, this is something we can nail, but it's really hard to nail. It's really hard to be like, this is the process intensifying towards a realization. But what I'm feeling is I gotta get out of here. This is not the place for me. Or I wanna stay here forever, how can I reach that, or whatever. There's a squeezing. It's a little bit like in the intestines, that necessary squeezing and releasing, squeezing and releasing. And that pre-leap turbulence, so before the leap, the kind of awful part, usually needs enough of two qualities that we think of as opposites. Could be like the possum and the lion. Do you know, do you have possums here? No. Possums are this, one of those like slow animals, not as slow as a sloth, but very slow. And it's famous for playing dead. If it's feeling it's going to be eaten. So deep, deep, deep rest. To find how little needs to be done for the bringing forth of connection, for the happening of connection, of just letting the breath be. How little effort needs to be. How many of my personal directions and agendas can I let go of and there's still breath? that is intimately felt. And then not to be confused, it might be surprising, but not to be confused when, through resting, through being a possum, you find that you're also a lion who's hungry. So there's the not trying to imitate rest, but just discovering how little effort needs to be for there to be intimacy with life, whether in the breath, the feet, or just the openness. And then a finer energy starts to fill you up. And it would move. It loves stillness, and from stillness would come, would be brought forth a movement. On retreat, we have the chance to not move too soon, not use up that energy. In any way that's not deeply honoring life, in any way that's from discriminating thinking, any way that's pre-planned. And the lion being hungry, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to literally run around or jump on something, of course. The jump can be the kind of jump we're talking about. A more important jump for a more important food. So practicing the kind of melting, and then finding that melting, then the liquid fills up, and it's a kind of a very alive liquid that, if we allow the aliveness to move it, move itself. That's an insight, that's a leap, that actually makes a difference in our lives. So that's that other meaning of turning point, that even though you forget that you had that thought, something happened. So it could be like you come into a dark room and you open the window and you can see what's in here, and then you close the window, but you've seen. You know there's a table, and there's a door, and there's a window over there. We tend to get so interested in that part of me that forgot my insight, and then I remembered it, and then I forgot it, and then I remembered it, and then I forgot it. Like, that's what mostly we talk about. And meanwhile, something else is going on. There's a bringing forth, and from there, a further bringing forth. And just being a little more in touch with that aliveness bringing forth, a shift, a leap, an honesty that's free from shame. So even if shame comes, it's still free enough from shame. And then the lion could be something like confidence, being willing to, since we don't really have much trust, just make our best guess and just do it, instead of thinking like, should I do that or that? We can call it intuition for now. sometimes, if we can have a broad definition of intuition, that sometimes I think, should I go this way or that way? That way. I think that's what people often mean by intuition. But other times, you just go that way, and you wonder if you should have gone the other way, but you're going this way. And maybe later you find that this was a good way to go. That might have also been a good way to go, but this was a good way to go. Other times, you kind of get news in advance, you're going to go that way. But I don't want to go that way. And you go that way. But intuition is one thing, and following the intuition is another thing. So the melting and the possum fills the well so that intuition can come up. And the lion says, okay, I'm a lion. And then there's a really cool Rumi poem that talks about the lion getting pounced on by the deer. Pounced is like jumped on. So, of course, usually the lion jumps on the deer. But in this upset, turning, the lion is happy to be jumped on by the deer. Rumi says, listen to your friend. And it's lovely how in his poem, sometimes the friend is his teacher, sometimes the friend is his own voice. Sometimes the friend comes in a character, a story. Listen to your friend. So the question of direction, where is my friend? Which direction? Which voice do I turn to? And so if we can feel how when I try to decide, okay, that's my friend, that voice, and that's not my friend. Sometimes that simplicity is really helpful when we just realize shame is not my friend. It's not my friend, it's never gonna be my friend. And love is my friend. And I can feel the difference. I can't always get out from under shame. I can't always quite feel the love. But love is the friend, shame is not the friend. Sometimes that simplicity is important. But we need in our practice to allow the way that we keep being more available to more and more subtle experiences. And that's a letting go of the initial drama. It's sometimes hard to let go of. It's like, this is boring. I'm not like so worried about something or so afraid or so angry. We have such a grudge against boring. What is grudge in Hebrew?
Tina.
If you've seen the movie of Amy Winehouse, and at some point she's receiving like whatever big award from her favorite singer, and she calls a friend backstage and says, everything's so boring without drugs. She's receiving a Grammy or whatever from like her favorite jazz singer that she always looked up to. He's giving her a Grammy, and she goes backstage and tells her friend, everything is so boring without drugs. It's true, in a way, at first. Everything is so boring without our drama. Even what we would have said would be the final satisfaction. But the confirmation of me as special is never quite enough. Ever. So if we can get the feeling, the felt experience, of the repetitive thinking and the realization thinking or realization moment and repetitive moment. And if we can know that really it's not so hard to feel the difference between those two. But it is so hard, so hard to come out of the addiction to trying to find our specialness. And if we can feel how any direction that I would choose, like me up here would say, yeah, that's a good direction, so discriminating thinking, that's a good direction. And I try to make myself go in that direction because I think that's the good direction. First of all, that kind of direction can never have all of you. And to bring forth a turning point has to have all of you. So if I try because I should, in other words, it's not going to work. It might be a good direction, but my approach won't be fruitful. If I feel, I realize, this is good, I can have the felt experience that there's something good here. I'm not sure exactly what. I'm not thinking this is good. I'm feeling something that kind of leaves space, gives support, has life in it. Something in deep inside says yes. This is listening to your friend. And so, though we wish it could be that we try really hard and we prepare really much and then we know that's the direction and I can just stick to that. It's partly because discriminating thinking is so tiring, we want to get to the end of it, but we think by getting just the right discriminating thought, that's the right path, then I can stop thinking. If we would just notice and take the feedback that discriminating thinking doesn't fit so well and we could drop it much more often, we don't have to completely do away with it. We don't have to get allergic to it. Then we can stay true to a straight path that curves. We can go with the curves, but we're staying straight, staying honest. At first, when we have a chance, conditions help, our practice helps, and we have a chance to feel sometimes that it's actually kind of simple to let that yes guide me on this curving straight path. And it's clear when the discriminating thinking, hurtful thinking is going on and when it isn't. When I say it's not going on, it can be going on, but I'm not attracted to it. I don't believe in it. there's an Indian story that there was a washerman, a man who did laundry, washed clothes. And he was down by the river where they do the laundry still, sometimes. Beating the clothes, spreading them on the sand to dry, folding them, packing them back on the donkey to take back to the village. And in the sand, he saw a really pretty rock. It was like clear and kind of sparkly, big. And he thought, that's a pretty rock. And so he thought, I'll tie it on my donkey's neck. It'll give me a little smile. Do you know the story?
No.
You should know the story.
Diamonds.
Yeah. Some diamond merchant came to town and recognized this to be the biggest diamond on earth.
India.
This was in India. At that time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling the story my teacher told. I have not confirmed the historical. Some people say it's true, I don't know. Some people say this is how the Kohinoor was discovered. You can probably guess the end of the story. No? Really? The diamond merchant came to town and said, oh, what have we got here? I could give you a couple hundred shekels for that. And the laundry guy was like, what? More money than he'd seen in his life. Okay. Sure, sir. And then the diamond merchant, because it was such a big diamond, took it to the emperor, because otherwise the emperor would have taken it from him. But if you give it to the emperor will give you something back. So he gave it to the emperor. And luckily it was a just emperor, a fair one, who said, where did you get this diamond? And the diamond merchant told the truth or didn't, but they found out where it came from and also gave something to the laundry guy. So there's a lot of hard work involved, not the kind that we were kind of looking for. We were applying for like the superhero kind of job. We want to win. Is it the opposite kind of hard work of kind of losing every day, losing direction, losing confirmation, losing a sense of my specialness, also losing a sense of my need for specialness, and not losing the lion's ability to leap, and not losing that lion's willingness to be caught by something bigger, something unaggressive, something not pushy, always available. But even though it's hard and it's a long way to go, even if you've already come a long way, it's a long way to go. A long way to go. And every day of practice is important, very important. Very important. Very important. The diamond that we picked up because it was pretty when we were 8 or 3 or 16 is the diamond, the biggest diamond. And not to sell it for 200, 2,000, or 2 million.
I'm sorry, I don't know your name in the corner who asked the question. Sorry. Is there anything left for now with the... Okay. May I know your name?
Yakir.
Yakir? Yakir? Thank you. Is there any question or anything to share?
You said shame is not a friend.
Hmm.
I feel that shame connects me to something very innocent and wonderful.
Hmm.
Maybe there's other ways to get there, but it's like it makes me like shame a lot sometimes.
Mm. Yeah, good. I was wondering if I would go into that. Thank you. So he's saying he likes shame, but in a really beautiful way. He says he experiences shame sometimes as something that connects him to his innocence and vulnerability. So I think that part of what this other meaning of shame can be is a factor, a force that's at play that can help us be possum and lion and allowing that deer to pounce on the lion. Not being too sure of ourselves and not being really into being sure of myself. But not being into being unsure of myself. If I'm into being unsure of myself, then I don't let the lion leap, much less the deer. If I'm into being sure of myself, then I'm going to fight everything that comes and not find that resting and melting and going really inside and letting the energy really, really fill inside before it overflows, which can take years or at least days. Rumi says, you are, he's maybe talking to the friend, you are every image, and yet I'm homesick for you. I think there's this second kind of shame, or I think you're not calling it a second kind, you're calling it regular shame, but it's close to feeling vulnerable and innocent. And I think it's also close to a second kind of shame or reverence. What would be reverence in Hebrew? I've heard a bunch of stories of mostly teenage guys that were with their so-called friends, the only friends they knew. And they were in the same car, and there was a gun in the car, and someone shot the gun, and it killed somebody, and they all went to jail. So there's that kind of friend, that kind of situation. Inside you. But sometimes we would rather be in the car with those friends than be in the car with a friend where we feel some kind of real connection that's upsetting. Where boredom is allowed and realization happens out of the blue, it comes forth. And something in us listens even when we don't want to. When we try to find that friend inside, it's true, we can't find which direction do I look. And if I try to make it be a direction, it's not. And at the same time, we find everywhere. You are in every image, and yet, I'm homesick for you. The deer leaping on the lion. Is something like Robert Fripp's leaping on the couch, off the couch. This kind of, you know the word bruise? If you get bumped and it turns brown or purple or green. This sort of bruising occupation of being someone and being someone on the path and trying to figure out which direction to go in. And we keep thinking it's going to be straight eventually because we keep thinking straight is going to be the right thing, and it never is. Or when we think curvy is the right thing, then it's straight. It's so lovely when we realize it's really not about that person that we think we are. And it doesn't leave that person out. There's just the right spot for that person in your life. But your life is not about that person. The person that you think you are. And so we do our best, and we find what helps melting, and we find that melting allows a filling, and eventually the filling allows a leap. And that melting and filling and leaping and melting and filling and leaping, that curvy way of honesty and contact with what's real. It will continually feel like, this is just this big. It's not such a big deal, it's just this big. We don't realize that it keeps bringing forth. And it's so good that we can't realize, we can't watch ourselves growing in that way. We can't try to own it. But eventually it is just that big that there's no point in trying to hold it. And it can just be without limit. And friendly. May all things live in peace. Open to life. And life's freedom. In every ordinary day. like a sail on a sailboat, open to the wind, to be carried by the momentum of awakening for all, including ourselves.